Welcome to the Kojo Namdi Show's Tech Tuesday, keeping you on the cutting edge of the tech revolution from WAMU 88.5 FM in Washington.
Support for this public radio podcast comes from Visa, offering the Visa Signature Card, featuring concierge services for travel, dining, and entertainment at visasignature.com.
Past 12.
From WAMU 88.5 at American University in Washington, welcome to the Kojo Namdi Show. It's Tech Tuesday. You're browsing on the internet, and all of a sudden, a flashing ad pops up offering you a free iPod or lobster dinner. Before you get ready to claim your prize, remember this. There are few free lunches and probably no free lobster dinners on the web. Chances are good that if you click on that flashing ad, you could become infected with spyware. If you're lucky, that could mean lots of annoying pop-up ads. If you're not so lucky, your financial information could be swiped or your computer could be permanently damaged. These days, spyware is a lot harder to detect than it used to be. And over the last few years, American consumers have spent billions of dollars dealing with it. So, how can you protect yourself from the spyware threat? Well, we've just got the people. We've got just the people to help you do that. Joining us in the studio is Ari Schwartz, Deputy Director of the Center for Democracy and Technology and Coordinator of the Anti-Spyware Coalition. Ari Schwartz, good to see you again.
Good to see you, Kojo.
Joining us by telephone is Tom Liston, Senior Security Consultant with Intel Guardians Network Intelligence. That's an information security consultancy based in the greater Washington area. Tom Liston is also co-author of the book Counter Hack Reloaded, a step-by-step guide to computer attacks and effective defenses. Tom Liston, thank you for joining us.
Good afternoon.
You too can join this conversation. Just make a call to 800-433-8850 or send your email to kojo@wamu.org. Have you had a bad experience with spyware? How did you get infected with it? 800-433-8850. Ari, spyware is one of those words that is a byproduct, essentially, of the internet, and it means slightly different things to different people. How do you define it?
Well, at the Anti-Spyware Coalition, which is a group of the major anti-spyware companies and public interest groups that are interested in fighting spyware, we've come up with a definition that encompasses sort of the idea that it's when they take when a program is loaded on your computer without your consent, or it takes personal information, the software program takes personal information and shares it without your consent, or you can't remove it. Or you're having trouble removing it. And so those are the three major pieces that we're focused on. The definition obviously goes on for 15 pages
or
so of all sorts of glossary terms, et cetera. But the basic idea is those three. And the FTC, Federal Trade Commission, has sort of confirmed that as well by encompassing those three areas in their areas of enforcement on this issue.
But the Anti-Spyware Coalition seems to feel that a crucial aspect of this is whether that technology is wanted or unwanted, the aspect of desirability.
Yes, because really when someone has an anti-spyware program, what they're doing is they're bringing a program onto their computer and saying, does this trust person, this trust company that built the anti-spyware program, can they help me make decisions to decide if I really want this program or I don't want this program? That's really what anti-spyware software is about, because there's so much that's put on our computer that we don't really understand the functioning of as average computer users. And the idea for an anti-spyware program is to try and help sort out what is probably unwanted.
Tom Liston, anything you can add to that definition?
Well, I think that anymore, everybody has both antivirus on their computer and anti-spyware on their computer both at the same time, and those two things actually work very, very similarly, but they have a very different end result. And one of the reasons that the antivirus companies have kind of split away from working to remove spyware is some sort of malicious software that has a business case behind it. And so if you're going to be removing that software, you have to be very, very careful about how you go about it, and you have to inform the user very well, and there really has to be some confirmation from the end user that this is indeed something that needs to be removed from their system.
Ari, I think that most people still think of those annoying pop-ups when they say the word spyware. Is that really what spyware is all about these days?
Well, less so than it used to be. It is still a major part, these adware programs that pop up ads that people didn't ask for, they work while you're on the web and not while the program that you install them with is running, and it's confusing to a lot of people out there. That used to be the major problem with spyware, because of the anti-spyware technologies, because of enforcement against these adware programs coming up without consent, self-regulation efforts, we've started to see that those programs have started to behave in a little bit of a better way. And now we're more worried about the keystroke loggers and types of software that are really taking people's personal information and sharing it without their consent.
Tom, how about rootkits? Are rootkits still also a major problem? And please also tell our listeners what rootkits are.
Okay, to begin with, a rootkit is a piece of software that actually installs itself into the operating system of the computer. Now, you have to understand that every question you ask your computer as an end user gets answered by the operating system. So if you ask the operating system, what files are on my hard drive, the answer comes back to you through the operating system. So what would happen if I were to be able to completely infiltrate a program into your operating system on your computer and then change your operating system? So every time you ask it about the files that I put on your computer, your operating system lies to you and tells you that they're not there. That's the essence of a rootkit. In other words, it really infiltrates itself into the operating system of the computer and then tricks that operating system into lying to you about particular things. We're seeing more and more of the spyware that is aimed at gathering financial information and personal information from machines, using rootkit or rootkit-like technology in order to keep itself, number one, hidden on the system, and number two, keep itself running on the system whenever it's started.
Ari, how about spyware that masks itself as an anti-spyware program? How does that work?
Well, there have been a lot of these kinds of cases where there will be a distributor of spyware, mostly adware, but also other kinds of spyware, and they'll just try and jam a lot of software onto someone's computer and then try and sell them the solution. There's sort of traditional, you know, we're going to cause the problem and then sell you the solution for $30 as well. And we've seen a number of cases. In fact, the first case that the Federal Trade Commission brought was a case where the hacker basically made about $2 million from installing software on users' computers and $2 million from selling the fake solution to remove it. That's a very common theme here. We want to tell people to go out and get anti-spyware software, but they have to do it in a trusted way. And a lot of what Tom is doing is helping people make those decisions.
Ari Swartz is Deputy Director of the Center for Democracy and Technology. He's also coordinator of the Anti-Spyware Coalition. He joins us for this Tech Tuesday discussion on spyware, adware, whatever you choose to call it, in the studio. Joining us by telephone is Tom Liston, Senior Security Consultant with Intel Guardians Network Intelligence and co-author of the book Counter Hack Reloaded, A Step-by-Step Guide to Computer Attacks and Effective Defenses. You can call us 800-433-8850 to talk about your problems with spyware and how you've dealt with them, or you can send email to kojo@wamu.org. Ari, it's my understanding that you are particularly concerned about a new program called Snoopstick. What's that, and why should people be worried about it?
Well, Snoopstick is a good example of the kinds of programs that we're starting to see more of. And these are programs that are made to track originally to track children, sometimes to specifically say to track your lover or someone to see what they're doing on their computer. This program comes in a USB device, and you just put the little key fob like we use for memory sticks into the computer, and then that program is downloaded surreptitiously, so the person whose computer is loaded on does not know that it's there.
You can be at work and you can be checking what your children are doing at home on your computer.
That's the idea. But what we've seen is in many cases these have been used by batterers to track their ex-wives, to track their ex-lovers, across computers, and which is clearly illegal. And the surreptitious nature, the fact that it's being done completely silently without the user of the computer knowing, sets up a situation where abused women are put at risk. And we've been working with the National Network to End Domestic Violence and the National Center for Victims of Crime to try and put education out there. And also to try and educate the people that create these programs to let them know that when you're doing this in a surreptitious way, you could be actually harming innocent people.
People can also use it to find out financial information on another computer. It seems to me it's a lot of like you got a GPS system to track where your children are driving in your car, and somebody accesses it and uses it to rob your children in your car at some point.
Certainly the technology can be used that way.
Allow me to go to the telephones. Here is Lee in Bethesda, Maryland. Lee, you're on the air. Go ahead, please.
Hi there. I've got two quick questions. One is, tell us about firewall software and how that fits into the equation, and whether if you just have antivirus and anti-spam, you don't need a firewall. And then secondly, we just bought a Apple MacBook for our son, and I don't know anything about protecting an Apple with regard to spyware and viruses.
Well, in relation to your second question, we also got an email from Judy in Castletown, Virginia, who said, is any of the spyware currently about enabled on the Macintosh computers? Personally, I never click on any pop-up ads, but since I have always owned Macs and probably always will, the profusion of pop-up ads that appear on my Macintosh screen makes me worry about it. Tom Liston, care to start with that?
Well, for the most part, simply by being on an alternate operating system, and which would be the Mac OS X, you're pretty much insulated from this. The reason is this. Spyware is a business, and like any business, you're going to target the largest possible market available to you. Well, obviously, the largest target market available on the Internet is users of the Windows operating system. And so people on a Mac are just, just by the nature of the fact that they're a smaller market share, are somewhat insulated from this. Now, I'm not going to say completely insulated from it, but for the most part, you are. As far as the gentleman's question regarding a firewall can't really be used as a replacement for antivirus or anti-spyware, and the reason is this. A firewall is essentially like a fence around your computer, and that fence is designed to let you go out and talk on the Internet. In other words, you can browse the web, you can go and get your email and things like that. But the fence is really there to keep people from getting in and attacking your machine directly. But if you happen to download a piece of software and run it on your computer, you're doing that behind that fence. So that fence doesn't really offer you any protection at all against things like spyware and adware.
Again, the number to call, 800-433-8850. It's Tech Tuesday. We're discussing spyware. You can also send us email to Kojo, K-O-J-O, at WAMU.org. Does the fear of spyware affect what you do on the Internet? And if so, how? Feel free to call us and email us. Tom, a lot of people complain that the anti-spyware software they use actually slows down their computer almost as much as the spyware itself. How do you deal with that problem?
Well, and like having any software running on your machine is going to have an effect on that machine. And yes, it is going to slow your machine down to have anti-spyware running. However, machines today really shouldn't. Machines today are ridiculously overpowered for an average user. And so you really shouldn't see a huge impact on your machine running anti-spyware. If you do see a huge impact, my suggestion would be to try a different piece of anti-spyware. In looking at these pieces of software, we have noticed that there is a tremendous range of impact over the different products available out there. So, if you're seeing a tremendous slowdown on your machine, maybe try a different piece of software.
You and a colleague, Tom, actually created your own spyware to test the effectiveness of anti-spyware software. What did you find?
We found that there was a very large range. What we were testing in particular was the ability of anti-spyware to pick up new unknown spyware simply based on this software doing spyware-like things. In other words, we would try to install a piece of software so that it would continuously reload itself whenever the machine was booted up. we had spyware that would do things like install a keylogger on the machine. And it was unknown in as far as signatures go. Now, there's a distinction that needs to be made between how antivirus and anti-spyware are able to detect spyware or viruses. There are two ways you can go about it, essentially. One way is, having seen a virus or having seen a piece of spyware before, you can write what's called a signature. And that essentially looks through all the files on your machine to try to find a little snippet within that particular file that indicates that it's a piece of spyware or it's a virus. That, like I said, requires having seen the software before. And the other way that you can do it is to pick up on the behavior. Spyware and viruses behave in certain ways. And so if you watch for that behavior, you can then pick up on what programs are doing those things and then indicate to the end user that something's a little fishy about this piece of software that's running on your machine. We tested simply the behavior-based stuff.
And Ari, speaking of creating your own spyware to test the effectiveness of anti-spyware software, Ari, it's my understanding that Tom is in Ohio even as we speak in order to test the physical security of a bank by breaking into the bank and getting into the vault. Enough said. We're going to take a short break. This is Tech Tuesday. You can call us 800-433-8850, or you can send email to kojo@wamu.org. By the way, Tom, call me if you succeed. I'm Kojo Nandi.
Good afternoon. You're listening to the Kojo Namdi Show on WAMU 88.5. I'm Matt McCleskey. Coming up at 2 o'clock on Fresh Air, the brain on the witness stand. Brain scans are being used increasingly in criminal trials as evidence that the defendant couldn't control his actions. Jeffrey Rosen has written a New York Times Magazine cover story on neuro law. He'll join Terry Gross on Fresh Air at 2 o'clock here on WAMU 88.5.
Support for WAMU 88.5 comes from Blattner Brunner, delivering global, national, and local communication solutions to help clients in D.C. and across the nation solve complex marketing challenges. More about Blattner Brunner is online at blattnerbrunner.com. Support for WAMU 88.5 comes from Constant Contact, dedicated to helping more than 95,000 small businesses and nonprofits grow using email marketing. More at constantcontact.com.
WAMU 88.5 and the Washington Performing Arts Society are giving away 5 pairs of tickets to see Audra McDonald and Barbara Cook at the Kennedy Center Concert Hall on March 17th at 4 p.m. Information is available at WAMU.org under calendar. Partly sunny skies this afternoon for the Washington region. High temperatures around 70 degrees. Tonight, mostly cloudy with lows in the upper 40s. And tomorrow, mostly cloudy skies with a slight chance of showers and thunderstorms in the afternoon. The chance of rain about 20%. Highs tomorrow in the mid-70s. Currently 61 degrees in northwest Washington at 1224. As we return now to the Kojo Namdi Show.
Welcome back to this Tech Tuesday conversation on spyware with Tom Liston, Senior Security Consultant with Intel Guardians Network Intelligence. That's an information security consultancy based in the greater Washington area. Tom is also co-author of the book Counterhack Reloaded, a step-by-step guide to computer attacks and effective defenses. Also in the studio with Tom joins us by telephone. Joining us in the studio is Ari Schwartz, Deputy Director of the Center for Democracy and Technology and Coordinator of the Anti-Spyware Coalition. We're taking your phone calls at 800-433-8850. You can send email to kojo@wamu.org. Ari, you're going to be on Capitol Hill on Thursday to testify about spyware. Can you tell us about that hearing and the kinds of questions you expect to get there?
Well, the last two Congresses, there's been a bill that's passed out of the House, the Spy Act, through the Commerce Committee, and Representative Bono and Representative Towns have been the co-sponsors of that bill for the last 4 years. And so that bill is coming up again, and I think there's going to be kind of a reexamination at how things in spyware have changed. Consumer Reports has done its first report on how much it actually costs people, and they found that $2.6 billion were spent by consumers, and that 1 in 8 people have been affected by spyware. Computer users have been affected by spyware. So
and that's interesting because advertisers spent during the same period of time about $16 billion advertising online, and yet consumers and companies had to spend more than $2 billion fighting off spyware. It seems to me that that proportion, that relationship is a little out of proportion.
Exactly. And we found early on in our research, we found that mainstream advertisers were actually funding this chain of the adware companies that were acting in ways that, that could be considered to be spyware. So one of the things that we worked on was to try and educate the companies. And now the New York Attorney General and
That's Andrew Cuomo.
Yes, Andrew Cuomo actually settled with three very large companies, Priceline and Singular and
But a lot of people would say, don't tell me these companies, as sophisticated as they are, didn't know that spyware was being included in their online advertising.
Well, in that case, actually, Attorney General Cuomo's office actually did find out that they did know or should have known, and that's why he got a $30,000 settlement out of them, which is not much considering the millions of dollars they spend advertising online. But I think it sends a message that this is really the first round of concern here, and the FTC is actually now starting to send letters to people that are advertising with. That have advertised with Zango and Direct Revenue to companies that they've brought settlements against.
Okay, we got an email from Carol in Herndon, Virginia. Tom Liston, Carol writes, several months ago, I downloaded a free underwater screensaver. Then I started receiving billing notices every time I clicked on the internet. There's a space to click on to order, but none to click on if you decline to order. So you can't opt out of the thing. There's a snail mail address in the ad, so I sent them a letter which was returned, no such addressee. I went into the system to delete this program and thought I had done so, but it's still there after 123 days. The company is Media Nexus. Thanks for any help. Can you give any help, Tom Liston?
Well, without sitting down in front of her computer, it's a little difficult to do. But
sure.
One thing that people have to remember, and I think it tends to get lost in the shuffle as people look at these things, a screensaver is actually just another piece of software that runs on your computer. Yeah, it's designed to put up pictures on your screen when you're not using your computer, but it's still a piece of software that runs, and it still can be installed and may become very difficult to uninstall. My suggestion to her would be to go and download one of. There are several free, very good. Anti-spyware programs out there. One that I've used in the past is Spybot Search and Destroy. Go and download something like that and see if maybe that'll get rid of it for you. What really is going to take, what it's really going to take to get rid of this thing is probably more than your average computer user is able to do on their own. They're really going to need some sort of piece of software to aid them in uninstalling this kind of stuff.
Okay, thank you very much for that email, Carol in Herndon, Virginia. Let's go now to Mike in Beltsville, Virginia. Mike, you're on the air. Go ahead, please.
Hi. I've got Apple all throughout the house in the small office, and it seems to work great for that. But I also am using a Stitch, a little program I downloaded that seems to work by exposing and telling you of someone trying to retrieve information out of unauthorized communication ports, and it pops up a little thing that says, hey, it's trying to get out of this port, and you want to do it or, you know, shut it down. And I'm just thinking, it seems to work pretty good. I don't know if you're aware of this or how effective it might be.
Tom, listen.
What that sounds like to me is it sounds like it's essentially a firewall program that's telling you that something that's running on your machine is trying to talk on the Internet. When you mentioned the word port, that's definitely an indication that it's something that's trying to make a network connection of some type. So what it sounds like is that's the outbound portion of a firewall indicating to you that something on your machine is trying to talk on the Internet. At that point in time, you need to decide, is this something that I want to allow to talk out on the Internet? Is this something that I would expect? Is this expected behavior out of the software that's running on my machine at this point in time?
Okay, that's what it seems to do. And if I don't authorize it to go out that, then I'm thinking, okay, and this is generally right after I maybe downloaded a page or something like that. And sometimes if I deny it, it won't even download the page. So it seems to be another fairly good piece of equipment to use.
Right, and like I said, that's just a firewall program that is regulating whether something can connect outbound on your machine or not.
Great, thank you very much.
Mike, thank you very much for your call. You too can call us on this Tech Tuesday on Spyware. The number is 800-433-8850. The email address is kojo@wamu.org. We're talking with Ari Schwartz, Deputy Director of the Center for Democracy and Technology and Coordinator of the Anti-Spyware Coalition, and Tom Liston, Senior Security Consultant with Intel Guardians Network Intelligence. Joining us now by telephone is Jerry Sarasale, Senior Vice President for Government Affairs with the Direct Marketing Association. Jerry Sarasale, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure to be back on your show again. I was on a long time ago.
Glad to have you back, Jerry. It's my understanding that you're going to be testifying on spyware before Congress this week. What's the message you're trying to get across?
Well, I think the message we're trying to get across from a marketer's point of view, you know, spyware, the real malware, the bad stuff that takes over your computer, that changes toolbars, that slows down the running of the computer, really hurts marketing in its own right. So we encourage Congress pass some standard federal guidance on this, some legal constrictions on this effort. It's probably not as imperative, and I know this may sound funny, not as imperative as it was 2 years ago, because I think those free download programs and things that are occurring are really actually helping to stop this type of practice and give the consumer and also business, because it was not only a consumer problem, individual Jerry Sarasale, it was a Jerry Sarasale Incorporated problem coming on computers. This is has really helped. From our perspective, from a direct marketing association perspective, we put out guidelines long before spyware laws came about that our members must follow. That if a program is being placed on your computer, you have to notify conspicuously that it's being done. There has to be an easy way for me, Jerry Sarasale, the owner of the computer, to get it removed from my computer, to stop running on my computer so I can stop it, which is one of the problems I think that your two callers ago had a problem trying to get it off, and it's very difficult, and we know that. And so we're in there going to be encouraging Congress to move forward and try and look at this at the spyware program. So that's basically kind of a general statement of what I will try to say on Thursday.
But Jerry Sarasale, some companies have said that their practices are legal because they include that user's agreement with their software that might say that they'll be tracking your internet use. But a lot of people, present company certainly included, don't read those agreements word for word. Is such a practice fair?
I think that the Federal Trade Commission has just come out with some cases. I think people try to place things in a EULA, which might be, that the licensee agreement, which might be very, very long and so forth. Our guidelines say it's got to be clear and conspicuous. So I think it's got to be a little bit better than just stuck on page 24 of a 25-page EULA. And so I think that that's an area where the bills that Congress is thinking about as they look directly at just the spyware issue or putting programs on your computer, the notice factor has to be much more robust than just hiding it someplace in a 25-page legal document that I went to law school, but long before computers became big time, so I probably wouldn't be able to understand too much of it anyway.
Coach, can I follow up?
Please do, Ari Schwartz.
I agree with Jerry's with what Jerry was saying. I think that it's very clear from the cases that the Federal Trade Commission and the state attorneys general have brought that this is illegal, that it's illegal to bury the notice somewhere and then say, oh, the person has said okay when it was in paragraph 80 of an 85-paragraph document. The problem that we've had, though, is the penalties just don't match the crime at this point in these consumer protection cases. So you have a case like the direct revenue case where we know for a fact that this company was making $30 million a year through advertising. And the FTC was only able to settle with them for $1.5 million. To us, that seems completely out of whack when the majority of their business was installing this through surreptitious means. And in fact, that company had a department that they called the Department of the Dark Arts, and the whole idea of it was to install the software on people's computers without their consent and keep it on without their consent. Now, if you have a department like that, obviously something that you're doing, a majority of your business is going to be illegal or you're going to have at least unethical. And we should be able to get a stronger penalty than really 1/40th of what they were making per year during their height.
Yeah, I can see how having a Department of the Dark Arts would kind of draw attention to the legality and the ethical nature of what you're doing. But Jerry Saracel, your organization, the Direct Marketing Association, announced new ethical guidelines back in January. Those guidelines say that companies should not use deceptive practices. We've just heard Ari talk about maybe the penalties aren't harsh enough. What will you do to members who don't follow the rules?
If they don't follow our rules, we, in our self-regulatory area, we want to try and get them to stop the situation. And if they don't, we can kick them. We have an antitrust exemption. We can kick them out of the DMA publicly. And also, we send cases off to the, we deal in all channels of marketing, so to attorneys general, to the Federal Trade Commission, to the Federal Communications Commission, and to the U.S. Postal Inspection Service. Oh, that we would probably move a case over. This would probably be an FTC case we would send. We would send all our file of complaint and so forth over to the Federal Trade Commission, and hopefully they would pick it up. I do think I want to add one thing onto what Ari said, is that I also think that what we push for at the DMA, we think there needs to be more money put into enforcement. I think that, it is generally – I think both Ari and I agree that it's illegal, even without these spyware laws being passed, it's illegal to deceptively load the stuff on your computer and take it over and not be able to remove it. We need enforcement there, and we supported the cross-border force enforcement because it's not just the American companies that are doing it, or it's not just happening coming from America. It's coming from all over, and Americans are doing it in other countries as well. So I think another factor is we've got technology improving with the anti-spyware stuff. We have we need to have more law enforcement and programs like this and others. And as Americans become more computer savvy, education in its own right. So we need all three. We need all of those prongs, plus ensure that the law enforcement people have the right laws to go after and get people. Go out and get people.
Allow me to go to Mary in Rockville, Maryland. Mary, you're on the air. Go ahead, please.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call. I'm at my wit's end. I think you and Jerry and all of you are so sophisticated. I've had a computer for 2 years, and my son uses it, and I don't watch everything he does, and I don't even know what I'm doing, and it's crashed. First year, I lost my screen. It crashed, brought it back. It crashed just now, lost my screen, had to get a new screen. Maybe some people should not own a computer.
No, well, actually, we are not as sophisticated as you think we might be. We got Ari sitting here in front of me in his underwear. I don't know what Tom Liston happens to be wearing as he's on the air over there, but I think Tom Liston might be able to answer your question.
The real issue here is, and I wouldn't go so far as to say that there are people that shouldn't own computers, but it really does come down to the fact that computers aren't, I personally believe computers aren't marketed the way that they should be. Computers are marketed almost as though they're appliances, and computers aren't appliances, because if something goes wrong with your refrigerator, it's not going to attack your microwave, okay? And you're not going to lose your PIN number to your bank account if something goes wrong with your washing machine.
Exactly.
The problem is computers are tools, and when you use a tool, it requires some sort of knowledge about what that, how that tool works, and you really have to actually be somewhat proficient with using it. So while I would never say to anybody, you shouldn't own a computer, what I would say to people is computer ownership brings along with it a requirement that you actually learn some things about how the computer works and learn some of the dangers of working with that computer.
How do you avoid the crashes? I've lost two computers. I mean,
well,
you know, I have the screens went. Should the screen go too?
Well, that seems a little bit odd that the monitor would actually go bad. That sounds like out-of-box failures or a problem with the monitor that you bought.
Well,
I can't imagine that software would cause, I mean, there are ways that you could write software that would cause a monitor to have problems, but I can't imagine that's what you're running into. It sounds like just bad luck with buying two monitors that just happen to go bad.
Well, people are really frustrated out there, and if you look at the Consumer Reports study, 1 million people threw away computers last year because the Consumer Reports, at least, is blaming spyware for that. So, you know, we hope the situation is getting better because of the technology, the anti-spyware technology, enforcement, self-regulation efforts. But it's not going to get better overnight, and that means getting secure software onto the computer users who themselves may not know how to put it on, and we have to be able to make that leap.
Tom Liston, for people whose computer or whose hard drives crash, is there a data recovery service that they can access to help them get back some of their data?
Yes, if you have data on your hard drive that's important to you and important enough to you that you would have to, you know, come up with some money to pay somebody to recover it for you, there are services available for that. But let me just try to run down a list of a few things that you can do as an end user that can help keep your computer running and spyware-free and malware-free. Okay, so let me just run down a few things. Number one, make sure you are running antivirus software. Also, make sure that you're running anti-spyware software, too. Now, there are bundled packages that will have both of those things, or there are a few pieces of software out there that attack both the virus problem and the spyware problem, but you need to make sure that you're running both antivirus and anti-spyware. As I said before, they're two different things, and it's very important that you're running both of those pieces of software.
Go ahead, please.
I was going to say, you should also be running a software firewall on your machine. And the number one most important thing that I can recommend to people is to use an alternate browser rather than using Internet Explorer, which is what comes with Windows. If you use an alternate browser, something like Firefox or Opera or one of the other available alternate browsers, you're really going to become less of a target. The single most targeted piece of software available on the Internet right now is Internet Explorer, without any question at all.
Mary, thank you very much for your call.
Thank you.
In the interim, you should know that Ari got really sophisticated. He put on a suit and tie and a nice shirt. So thank you very much. You inspired him. We're going to be taking a short break. When we come back, we'll continue this Tech Tuesday conversation on spyware with Ari Schwartz, Tom Liston, and Jerry Saracel. I'm Kojo Nandi. Coming up at 1, progressive values in an era of national security. Author Marcus Raskin on the tensions between America's New Deal liberal traditions and today's war on terror. Today at 1 on the Kojo Nandi Show on WAMU 88.5.
And then at 2 o'clock on Fresh Air, the brain on the witness stand. Brain scans are being used increasingly in criminal trials as evidence that the defendant couldn't control his actions. Jeffrey Rosen has written a New York Times Magazine cover story on Nero Law, and he joins Terry Gross on Fresh Air at 2 o'clock here on WAMU 88.5.
Support for WAMU 88.5 comes from Entergy, the electricity company committed to harnessing nuclear energy to help make America less dependent on foreign fuel. Entergy, the power of people. Support for WAMU 88.5 comes from Sprint, together with Nextel, helping the public sector to improve the quality of life for Americans with real-time mobile communications, including Nextel walkie-talkie and GPS. Online at sprint.com/business. Sprint, power up.
A mix of sun and clouds for the Washington region this afternoon. High temperatures around 70 degrees. Tonight, mostly cloudy. Lows in the upper 40s overnight. And tomorrow, again, mostly cloudy. A slight chance of showers and thunderstorms by the afternoon. High temperatures tomorrow in the mid-70s. The chance of rain about 20%. Tomorrow night, mostly cloudy with lows in the upper 50s. And Thursday, mostly cloudy. A 40% chance of showers and thunderstorms with highs in the lower 70s. It's currently 62 degrees in Northwest Washington at 12:46 as we return to the Kojo Namdi Show here on WAMU 88.5.
It's Tech Tuesday, and we're talking spyware with Tom Liston, Senior Security Consultant with Intel Guardians Network Intelligence and co-author of Counter Hack Reloaded, a step-by-step guide to computer attacks and effective defenses. Ari Swartz is Deputy Director of the Center for Democracy and Technology and Coordinator of the Anti-Spyware Coalition. He joins us in the studio. Joining us by telephone is Jerry Saracel, who is Senior Vice President for Government Affairs with the Direct Marketing Association. Jerry, from a marketing perspective, isn't there a big risk to loading tracking software onto a person's computer, even if that person agrees? Won't it ultimately make the consumer a little crazy and less likely to purchase the product that you're advertising?
If the consumer doesn't agree, I think there's a major issue. Or if the consumer doesn't know, it's even that's really bad. And especially taking over and ruining computers, it destroys confidence in people using the internet, and that's bad across the board for marketers, not just Jerry Searcel, who's trying to sell you a new tie or sell Ari a tie. He's the guy that needs the ties, I guess. And but from a marketer's standpoint, if they want to test to try and find out what type of marketing programs work the best and so forth, and use and tell people that are using software to try and see what this person does, they receive this ad, what this another person received a different type of ad coming over the internet, and how effective that is. It has the potential of creating a better targeted, a better relevant marketing arena for people, and therefore will make marketing less expensive, can lower costs and so forth. But people have to know that that's there. You also I think it's knowledge of the consumer. Americans aren't stupid. You tell them what you're doing and give them a choice, because they can say no, or they can get rid of the program from their computer. Those are things that should happen. They can be part of the process, part of the marketing process. And I think that if it's open that way, I think that that's okay. And we're not so fearful of it. But we have to get rid of people who don't allow it to be open, or try and get rid of them, and need government help to do that.
Jerry Saracel is Senior Vice President for Government Affairs with the Direct Marketing Association. Thank you very much for joining us.
You're quite welcome.
Ari Swartz, we got an email from Janice in Washington, D.C., who writes, I don't normally think of members of Congress as being particularly tech-savvy. Can Congress really have an impact on dealing with a huge problem like spyware? I know you testified before an appropriations subcommittee, I guess, about a month ago, in which a member of Congress actually talked about downloading something that was supposed to be for free.
Yeah, there was a member of Congress who was discussing that he was trying to download a free ringtone and ended up with a subscription to something completely that he hadn't signed up for that was not free. And I think that's a common experience. So they certainly know the impact, because they, aside from their constituents,
they're
experiencing
consumers.
It, they are consumers themselves, and they get hit by spyware. And I think that makes them very angry. And we hear that when we go and testify in front of Congress. And they have a right to be angry, as most of the consumers out there are. And they're looking for solutions.
Here's Barry from Ashburn, Virginia, with an email, proposed solution. Would it be more effective for a consumer boycott of the companies that are paying the spyware companies to spy on their behalf?
Well, I do think we have tried to out some of the companies that advertise in this way, and certainly that is what Attorney General Cuomo was trying to do in settling some of these cases for low dollar amounts, just trying to get the names out there of some of the companies that have been supporting some of this bad stuff. But I do think that there's also I mean, 95% of this stuff is already illegal. And so to answer Janice's question already directly, they can raise the penalties in those areas for the areas where we know things are already illegal. That's something Congress only has the power to do. They can spend more money on enforcement from appropriation side. So there's something that Congress can do that they're looking into. And something else that we think is probably the most important thing to cover the area that's not already covered by existing law is to pass comprehensive privacy legislation.
Tom, listen, I've got a bunch of questions for you. I guess I should ask them one at a time. They come in the forms of both email and phone calls. Allow me to start with an email from David in Silver Spring, Maryland. I think that the availability of computer monitoring and key logging software like Silent Logger and Spectre Pro is positively frightening. Do you know any means to detect, neutralize, and or remove such software?
Keyloggers are a kind of a different animal. There are actually anti-keylogger pieces of software on the Internet, things that are simply designed just to detect the presence of a keylogger on your machine. The problem is I can think of about half a dozen different ways that keyloggers can work, and it's very difficult to be able to detect all of those ways reliably. It is very frightening, and what's even more frightening is that while we're looking at a lot of the, we're talking about a lot of the adware kind of pieces of spyware out there, what's really beginning to take place more and more on the Internet is we're seeing a decline in marketing via spyware and adware, and what we're seeing more and more is attacks against personal information, attacks against financial information that people store on their machines that are kind of stepping in and taking the place of a lot of these advertising means that were used before. It's almost as though the people who are writing this stuff have figured out that people are sick and tired of ads popping up on their computers, and that's kind of become passé. And so now they're going after personally identifiable information or financial information stored on people's machines.
Here's John in Laurel, Maryland. John, your turn.
Hi. I'd like to know, how can you remove anti-spyware stuff from your computer? I'm sure I have some on my computer. I don't know how to get rid of them.
You think you have spyware on your computer?
Right.
And you'd like to get rid of it?
Right.
Tom?
There are two really good pieces of free anti-spyware software out on the Internet. I mentioned one earlier. It's called SpyBot Search and Destroy. There is another piece of free anti-spyware program software out there called AdAware. Both of those versions you can download off of the Internet and run on your machine. What you want to make sure you do when you download them is make sure that they're up to date. Both of those pieces of software have somewhere in them a means to click and go out and update the software. And just like your antivirus software, anti-spyware really needs to update its signatures so it knows about the most recent.
Well, hang on a second, Tom, and you hold on the line, John, because there's a wrinkle on that comes from an email from David who says, how do I know that the regular updates to my protection programs, AVG, et cetera, are not attempts by anti-spyware or anti-antivirus makers to defeat my protection programs?
Pretty much every piece of antivirus software and anti-spyware software uses the same kinds of technologies that we use when we go on the Internet and purchase something. It's called Secure Socket Layers, SSL, and it's that little lock that appears in your browser. That little lock that appears in your browser tells you two things. It tells you that the communication between you and the vendor or the store that you're going to on the Internet is secure. It's encrypted. But it also tells you something else. It tells you that the person that you're talking to is the person that they claim to be. That's the same kind of communication that's used when your anti-spyware goes out and updates itself. It checks to make sure that it's talking to the right place, and that the information that it's getting is coming from where it's expected to be coming from.
And Ari, we got this email from Paul in Washington, D.C., who asks, which software product is better, Norton or McAfee? I'm using McAfee products without trouble.
Well, I'm not going to answer that question directly because they're both members of the Anti-Spyware Coalition, as are LavaSoft and Safer Networking makes SpyBot. So what I'd say is I'd go, if you're concerned about You need to get an independent resource to tell you about these programs. We've seen too many people just click on ads for any anti-spyware software that comes around because they know they have a spyware problem. Really, you need to go to CNET. You need to go to PC Magazine, to independent sources. Wall Street Journal, Walt Mossberg does these independent reviews. Consumer Reports does independent reviews. There's a lot of places. Find the one that you trust and use them as your guide. Or you can... if you can get Tom on the phone, Tom can give you some advice as well.
John, thank you very much for your call. Tom, you've worked with something called the Internet Storm Center, which monitors malicious activity on the Internet. Can you give us an example of the kinds of activities you're on the watch for?
Well, we watch pretty much all sorts of different kinds of activities. One of the things that we have is a feed of attacks against corporate networks. And that shows us what kind of attacks are out there. We also tend to get malicious software sent to us by, you know, just plain old people on the Internet who come across this stuff. So we get to take a look at this stuff pretty much cutting edge. The newer attacks, we'll be able to see those very quickly. And I'm trying to think of a good example. At one point in time, we did a reverse engineered a piece of malicious software that would install itself as a helper into Internet Explorer. It would wait until someone logged into their banking site. It had a list of about 50 different banking sites on there, so it would watch and wait until someone logged into one of those different banking sites. Then it would kick on a keylogger. It would record the next 1,000 keystrokes, bundle those up, and shoot them off to a website someplace for storage. When we actually went to the website to take it apart, we found about 15,000 different accounts that were stored on that website.
Ari Schwartz, we only have about 40 seconds left, but the Center for Democracy and Technology is lobbying for a comprehensive privacy law for the Internet. You mentioned privacy before, but what would such a law mean in terms of combating spyware?
Well, I think most companies do a good job of protecting privacy, and they care about it, but there are still these companies that don't respect individuals' personal information, and that has created this market for personal information out there without our consent and without us knowing, being able to correct information that's wrong. We really like to see that whole ecosystem changed around with a comprehensive privacy bill.
Ari Schwartz is Deputy Director of the Center for Democracy and Technology. He's also coordinator of the Anti-Spyware Coalition. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Kojo.
Tom Liston is Senior Security Consultant with Intel Guardians Network Intelligence. That's an information security consultancy based in the greater Washington area. He's also co-author of the book Counterhack Reloaded, a step-by-step guide to computer attacks and effective defenses. Tom Liston, thank you for joining us.
It was my pleasure. Thank you.
I'm Kojo Nandi.
Support for this public radio podcast comes from Acura, featuring the all-new turbocharged Acura RDX with available voice-activated navigation. More at acura.com/RDX.